D3. Number 1B.
Now, these are synonymous terms, and it is interesting to see how ignorant one usually is on the term synonymous. So let me just take the definition of synonymous in order to bring out what synonymous is, and second, in order to counteract all those arguments which say that each term, because it is synonymous, is freely and unlimited and interchangeable with one another. Now, this is not true. If I say a man is tall or is great, it's something very different. But tall and great may be synonymous terms. So, synonymous terms do not mean that they are terms which are freely interchangeable. Not at all. The dictionary says that by synonymous terms, we usually understand words that coincide or nearly coincide in some part of their meaning. In some part of their meaning. Doesn't say in all parts of their meaning, in some part of their meaning, and may hence, within certain limits, within certain limits, be used interchangeably. Within certain limits, they can be used interchangeably. While outside of these limits, they may differ very greatly, in meaning and use. So here we have the meaning or the definition of synonymous, and see that within certain limits these synonymous terms are freely interchangeable. And Mrs. Edith says so when they are freely interchangeable. She says they relate all to one God. The moment I say God, I can put in place of God, I can put any of those seven synonymous terms. But then, within other limits, they are not freely interchangeable, because they bring out the characteristic of that one God. And therefore, when I say that God is mind, I say something completely different than when I say God is spirit, or God is soul, or God is principle. Because then I begin to characterize the one being or God in a specific way, because mind then means something very different than spirit, and in this way I get the differentiation of that diffuse meaning or word or name God. Now let's be clear that God is a name, that God doesn't mean a thing, nothing at all. God is a name, and she says that God is a name for the Supreme Being, and it is a name. And God is a term that has been taken over from mythology and has been taken over by the Judean Christian religion, and instead of many gods has proposed the theory or the axiom of one God. But it still was God, and nobody really knew what that God is. Nor does theology know today. Nor does the monotheist of today know it. You take any 100 or 1,000 believers in one God, a good Christian or a good Jew, both believe in one God, or a Hindu, or a Buddhist, or a Muslim, they all believe in one God. They are all monotheists. Well, if you take 100 Christians and ask them, what is God? The answers are always different. In other words, each one has his own sense of the one God. And therefore we have not one God, but many, many gods. More gods than they had in heathen time. Each one has his own concept of the one God, but it is his own concept. Now, this is what Mrs. Eddy tried to do, you see, to take away that pluralism of concepts about the one God and present from Revelation the true nature of God by defining God and therefore by making the term God obsolete. I think the time and our age would be much better off if the term God would be put out of our vocabulary, if we never would talk again anymore about God. It's the most misleading concept. For the one God is this, for the other God is that, for the one God is there, and for the other one God is in another place, and so on and so on and so on and so on. Therefore, science comes along and shows that the term God is obsolete and that in its place we can put the compound term principle, which includes all other synonymous terms. Then we have a defined sense of the one God. So by studying those synonymous terms and see how each one as synonymous term is referring, each one is referring to the one being, but that each one is characterizing that one being in a different way, we get a diversified sense or a classified sense of the one infinite. And this naturally is the necessity or the prerequisite, I could say, for any science. No science just can stand on the axiom that there is one being. Science is that which takes the one being or the one subject and analyzes it and classifies its characteristics. And only then, when it has classified concepts, only then can a science be built. And that's what Mrs. Eddy did. What she said, her science is not built on the term God. Her science is built, what she said, these terms constitute science. They are the science. Therefore, just as in arithmetic we have the 10 digits, so in the science of being, our constituents are defined through those 7 synonymous terms. Then, just as in arithmetic, we can take the 10 digits and see how they operate in very definite ways, say in arithmetic as addition, as subtraction, as multiplication, as division, in the very same way, and that's what I want to show this weekend, in the very same way, Mrs. Eddy shows now how these 7 synonymous terms can be used in very different ways of operation. Operation, as we'll see, in the world, in the Christ, in Christianity, and in science, to bring out the infinite operation of these 7 synonymous terms in being. So that out of a static sense of being, we have a dynamic sense of being. Yes. Now, I will come back to all these, but I just want to first give the very fundamentals. Namely, we saw that instead of the mythological concept called God, Mrs. Eddy put the demythologized concept or scientific definition of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But she says that principle and idea is one, and we begin to see that the ideas characterizing these 7 synonymous terms can be seen through the research of the textbook by seeking and researching. Can you say researching in English? No. Yeah? you forgive me sometimes if my English is not quite up to date, by the research into what are the characteristic ideas characterizing each of these synonymous terms. In other words, let's see in Christian Science that we have to do with that noumenon called the seven synonymous terms and their phenomena, which are ideas and only ideas. In other words, we begin to see in Christian Science that the reality of being consists only fundamentally of principle and idea. That ideas constitute the universe of being. That ideas are the phenomena of being and nothing else. So that really consciousness, which wants to be attuned with being itself, is a consciousness that it must be aligned not only to the synonymous terms, but by knowing what the synonymous terms are, consciousness is aligned to those specified ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. And if we have that, then we have being. Principle and idea is one, and this one, she says, is God, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent being. And so this being is all the being there is. So let me just see the nature of what is the nature of idea. See, I like to go out from that great statement Mrs. Eddy makes in the sixth chapter, that tremendous chapter where she just shows the science of her revelation, where she says, from the infinite one in Christian Science. Well, we started out with that one. From the infinite one in Christian Science comes one principle and its infinite idea. Principle and idea. She not even says man and the universe. Idea. Comes one principle and its infinite idea. And with this infinitude comes spiritual laws and rules, the science. We begin to see the science of those seven synonymous terms expressed through the ideas. And with this infinitude, she says, come spiritual laws and rules and their demonstration. Not our demonstration. And their demonstration. So we begin to realize that the whole practice of Christian Science, the whole question of how to demonstrate Christian Science and so on, is a question that the infinite principle demonstrates itself through its infinite idea. And that therefore we begin to realize that if consciousness is aligned to principle and is aligned to those ideas which characterize those synonymous terms, that that brings the science of ideas, and that science of ideas brings their demonstrations. So in this way we begin to be aware of the power of ideas, the nature of ideas. That all that is necessary really is ideas, the universe of ideas. One is always very much impressed when studying the textbook and when one asks oneself now, what is really constituting the universe or reality? What makes up the content of reality? That she always would say but one thing, namely God and his ideas. But you would say that, let me see if I have a few references, says, yes, nothing is real and eternal but God and his ideas. Now, I always take what Mrs. Eddy says 100% if I can. Therefore, when she says nothing, then I say she means nothing. She actually means nothing. And if she actually means nothing, she means nothing. So, actually, nothing is real and eternal but God and his ideas. So what on earth should I be concerned with anything else but with God and his ideas? Why should my consciousness be engaged in thinking or in contemplating or being aware or taking into account anything else but God and his ideas? It's so terribly simple and so powerful, so enormous. Think how our life would become so different if we wouldn't be concerned with all the things that are going on humanly, materially, and so on, mentally, psychologically, and so on. If we had nothing is real and eternal, nothing but God and his ideas. If we would be true, inwardly true, to Christian Science, to the simple but greater statements, so that we would go out into the world from morning to night and just be jolly happy and grateful that nothing is going on but God and his ideas. What is there to be troubled about? Why don't we believe to what we confess? We all say we are Christian Scientists, are we? I always ask myself, am I actually? I mean, to be a Christian Scientist is not to say, I believe in the textbook. To be a Christian Scientist is to take what's stated in the textbook and stand on that. And standing on that means, once for all, to see that nothing is going on and is eternal and is real but God and his ideas. And that's quite good. That's quite all right. Because she says, what is that other statement in the fifth chapter? She says, the maximum of good. I like that, the maximum of good. I don't know what about you, but I think everybody likes it. The maximum of good. Well, what is the maximum of good? She says, the maximum of good is the infinite God and his idea, the all in all. Now, it's God and his idea, that's the maximum of good. The maximum of good is not if I get this and this and this and this which I wish. The maximum of good is to have that consciousness that the only thing that is real and eternal is God and his ideas, and that is at the disposition of everyone. Everyone can get hold of it. Everyone can think in that line. Everyone can be aware of that. All, she says, is divine mind. When she says all, that means to me all. It doesn't mean all minus something. But all means all. Just all. You know what all is? All is all. No? Not all minus, here I have a little problem and there is something which doesn't work and so on. It means all is infinite mind and it's infinite idea. So here we can see that if we take Mrs. Eddy's revelation as what it is, fundamentally as what it is, it means to have that new standpoint where we begin to realize that we can go out from mind and look out from mind and see mind's infinite ideas. And that constitutes the maximum of good. That constitutes all that exists and is eternal. that constitutes being. So that in the way, see, we begin to study those synonymous terms and get the true divine sense of those capitalized terms, and we can only get the true divine sense of them if we begin to understand them through those ideas which characterize them, then consciousness is just filled of principle and idea. And this principle and idea is one, and that's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent being. So, if we are devoting our time and energies to that study and to that research, we really are devoting ourselves to our true being. That's where she says the principle and idea is one, the principle and idea are coexistent, are co-eternal, that they are inseparable, that they are indivisible, where there is nothing going on but principle and idea. Now what about life from morning to night, if we get up and say, all that is going on, and nothing is going on, but the infinite principle and its infinite idea? It makes everything so much easier. It's quite interesting to see how Mrs. Eddy defines ungodliness. She says ungodliness is really opposition to the divine principle and its spiritual idea. So the biggest ungodliness we can have in our consciousness, really sin, sin defined scientifically today, would mean that we oppose to go out and think out from principle and as idea. That opposition towards having as our starting point, our viewpoint, principle, looking at its own infinite idea, that if we oppose that, that that is the new term of ungodliness or sin. It lifts our whole concept of ungodliness and sin and so on right out of the moral or ethical or religious, right out into the scientific sense of taking the scientific standpoint, which is principle, and principle does not know anything about itself but its own ideas. It knows nothing but its own ideas. Therefore, in the chapter on practice, Christian Science, it's quite interesting that in that chapter she uses idea very seldom, that she uses principle very seldom, principle and idea. The one of the few times she uses it, she says that in times of sickness and sin tempts you, cling to God and his idea. See, there she lifts that whole practice out of a metaphysical thought practice into the science of practice. The science of practice where she says, what is your treatment? What is the method of your treatment? The method of your treatment is nothing else but to stick to your standpoint of principle, which only knows its infinite ideas. Because from the infinite one, Christian Science, comes one infinite principle, and its infinite idea, and their rules, and their laws, and their demonstrations. They demonstrate themselves. And in this way, we begin to feel something about that nature of ideas, that ideas operate by themselves. That ideas, really, when one tries to start thinking about ideas, that one begins to feel the power of an idea. You see, isn't it terrific that if ideas come from principle, from the synonymous term, from being, that therefore if we study what the ideas of being are, then each time consciousness touches the nature of an idea, it not only touches a little dust in the immensity of being, but the infinite itself. Therefore, every time we touch the idea of power, we touch the power of the infinite. Not just a little power. We can't. Because when we touch an idea, we touch an idea of a synonymous term. And the synonymous terms always stand for the infinite one. And this gives us that sense of the holiness and bigness of a study of the synonymous terms, that we say that in the measure as consciousness begins to acquaint itself with the ideas of the synonymous term, that in that sense we touch the infinite, and therefore the infinite is operating as us. And so Jesus would have said, the Father that dwells in me, he doeth the work. And we could see that the principle which we touch through the consciousness of ideas is operating as us. So that we begin to get that feel, that constant feel that just goes with one from morning to night, that really nothing is ever going on but principle in operation, mind in operation. So that when we ask, well, what is man? We just can't say, well, there is no man. Mrs. Eddy only says that principle expresses itself in ideas. And so all that there is going on is principle operating as its infinite idea. So that we are mind in operation, spirit in operation, soul in operation, principle in operation, life in operation, truth in operation, love in operation. I wonder what we can wish for more than that, than to be mind itself in operation, spirit in operation. It's only a matter of consciousness. Matter of consciousness if we think we stand outside of being and have to look at being and have to call down that being and wake that being up and say, go and do something, come here and help me and do this and do that. Or of having that wonderful unity of being which says, there is not me and God. There is only principle and idea, one. Therefore, nothing is going on but principle and its infinite idea. Now, when we know what that means, principle, through mind and spirit and soul, and demonstrating itself as life, truth and love, if we know what principle means and its idea, then naturally our consciousness is consciousness of being. Well, I have to stop here for a moment. We just make a break for 5 minutes to